What is up, beautiful people? Welcome back to Small Talk with Sid, the podcast with your host, Cindy Matone. And it has been a few weeks since we last chatted. There has been so much that has been going on, but I have been recording some awesome episodes with some amazing women, which you guys will get to hear very, very soon. But personally, I mean, I am going now into my almost third month of living in Miami. And guys, there has just been so much going on personally and emotionally and honestly even physically, and I'm just excited to talk about it with all of you. So a solo episode will be coming to you very soon with that, but again, I've just been chatting with a lot of amazing women and it's really inspiring and inspires me to just kind of keep growing and doing what I'm doing. But I have someone, so I'm so excited to introduce you on today's podcast, and I also have a special promo code in this intro, so be sure to check out for that. But let me introduce you to Denise. In today's episode, I am chatting with the bold, beautiful, and pure badass Denise Lee, who is the founder of the athleisure brand Alala. Alala's mission is to bring joy to women through sophisticated, high-quality clothing, but also seek to advance dialogue around body positivity and diversity. Recently, Alala has undergone a major rebrand, and in many ways, it's reflective of the journey Denise has gone through. At just 18 years old, Denise left Singapore and moved to New York to pursue her dreams. Her early career started off working for retail legend Chris Birch to eventually starting a self-funded multi-million dollar athleisure brand. As I chatted with Denise, I learned that having a voice and being the face of a brand has come with its challenges. Growing up in Asian culture, it was uncomfortable for her to have a voice and put herself out there. What made it even more difficult was that when athleisure brands were on the rise, Denise looked around and saw that most of the other women in the space did not look like her. With that came major imposter syndrome, which we dive into and how she overcame that. We also chat about things business related, like how she started her brand from the ground up with no venture capital, how to stay relevant in an oversaturated market, and some of the fears young entrepreneurs have surrounding money. This was such an informative and empowering episode to listen to, so be sure to tune in. And I also have a special surprise for you guys. So if you use code SMALLTALK20, you get 20% off all full-priced items at alalastyle.com. More info in the description. Now with that, let's meet Denise. Hey guys, I'm here with the beautiful, bold, stunning Denise Lee. And we were just talking about how I'm excited for her to come down to Miami, how she needs more sunshine in her life. Although New York, are you based in New York or LA?
In New York.
Okay. New York has, you guys have been getting good weather as of lately, right?
Yeah, it's been beautiful. Can't complain. Just looking forward to the summer, I think, for me.
Yes, yes. And also, you guys as well in New York, you have any plans coming up or no?
For the brands?
Yes.
Yeah. So lots of new things. We just actually went through a rebrand. So we have a new logo, a new set of colors, but more importantly, have like a more focused like mission and you know, vision moving forward. So that's super exciting. And we have a store on Bleecker Street in New York too. So lots of like really fun programming coming for the spring.
Amazing. Good stuff. Well, you said you're having a good day so far. So I'm glad we're getting this episode in the mix of all of that. So I was reading your story, truly like somebody that like you were just such a go-getter and like you really took some guts to do what you did, which is like really insane. So I know that I read it, but I just want to like kind of go back for our listeners. So let's talk about how like you moved from Singapore to New York and what that journey was like. So let's start there.
Yeah. You know, for me, like my parents had always encouraged us to like kind of leave the nest and like go and explore the world. They're both entrepreneurs themselves. So I feel like they always had that kind of spirit to them. So I grew up in Singapore and then I decided to go to Northwestern for college, going from like, you know, Miami type weather, super hot every day to like freezing cold for half the year.
Right.
I don't know if I like knew what I was getting myself into, but really had a great time at Northwestern. And then afterwards, you know, I've always loved fashion. My dad's in like the manufacturing fashion business used to be. And my mom was like an artist and like worked in the arts field. And so felt like that kind of, you know, really gave me a passion for fashion. And so I was like, I'm moving to New York, you know, after I graduated. And a lot of my friends moved home. A lot of people like, you know, didn't come to New York or they moved back to Singapore. And so I really came to New York kind of fresh and didn't really know a ton of people and started my career at Armani Exchange, which was awesome. But, you know, like moving to a new city, especially one like New York, has so many, you know, layers of complexity to it. But I've lived here now for 17 years and I absolutely love it. It's home now, I think, for me.
Do you have siblings or just is it just you?
So I have two siblings, one's in Singapore and one's actually in Seattle.
Okay. Wow. So you officially came here when you were what, 18 years old?
Yeah. So 18 to Northwestern. And then when I graduated, I was 21, 22, moved to New York for my first job. And yeah, been here ever since.
Okay. So it sounds like I was interested in like your parents' background. Cause I was wondering, I'm like, is this something that they expected you to do? But like they were in the industry themselves. So like they kind of like catapulted, you know, your career.
Yeah, they've always been very, very supportive of me and what I've wanted to do, you know, and kind of been great guides along the way. I think people sometimes when they don't have their family support, especially when they want to start a business, it's a lot more challenging because you have all these voices, you know, kind of like saying to you, are you sure? Are you sure? Like, maybe you should just stick to something safer. And so I was very blessed to be able to have parents who are like, yeah, go do it. You know, like, don't worry, we'll be here for you. No matter what.
Yeah. But even if you don't have parents that support you, I think like a new environment, and this is me speaking from experience, like it just like does something to the brain where it resets you. You're meeting new people, you're thinking differently. And so I think just like changing up in your environment is so like crucial for growth. So I think that was 18, also being 18 years old during, I mean, 18 year old in New York is wild. That's when I lived in the city when I was 18, and it's a really great experience. So that was the perfect place to be as like, you're kind of to like build yourself as a career woman. So you're going to Northwestern. You also went to NYU, I read as well.
Yes. So after I worked at Armani Exchange, my first job for a couple of years, I was like, okay, like starting to think about, you know, wanting to be an entrepreneur, wanting to like get more of a business foundation because I just had the marketing background at that point. So my dad had gone to business school and he was like, also again, very encouraging of like, yeah, like if you're interested in business, you know, why don't you go back to business school? And for me, it was like the idea of building a network here in New York, but also, you know, kind of getting the foundations of all those different parts of a business, right? Like understanding accounting, understanding like macroeconomic and how that kind of plays into everything. And so I decided to go to NYU business school for 2 years full time. And that was, again, an amazing experience. Met a ton of people who had the same interests as me, more on the fashion side and kind of luxury retail sector. And so built a great group of friends there as well.
Mm-hmm. And was this the years that you were working for Chris Birch, which is the ex-husband of Tory Burch? These were the years you were doing that?
This was after. So I went 2 years full-time at NYU, and then I started working for Chris Birch, who, like you said, is the ex-husband of Tory Burch. He is a very prolific investor and builder of brands. It's the reason I wanted to go work for him because he was doing everything that I loved. Mm. And I really wanted to be in the mix of that.
What exactly were you doing for him?
So I was kind of like a chief of staff. And I think people maybe get that mixed up with like assistants, executive assistants. So for me, I was kind of like more on the business side of like helping him follow up with, you know, people after meetings, like helping him move projects along, you know, in their development. I was also part of a team that was like reviewing deals for him because he would be an angel investor in some deals. And, you know, we would get a lot of deal flow coming in. So reviewing deals for him and kind of advising him on those things as well. So it was a mishmash of everything that, you know, I kind of was able to take that and then use a lot of what I learned to start my own business.
I mean, what a great like foundation though, because you hear a lot of people like getting their startup in fashion of like working like in the closet or whatever, and you know, doing things like that. Where this, you're kind of like getting to like the thick of the business of it, which is like such a cool foundation. And like, yes, it was a lot, but like I think you were at that perfect age of like soaking it all in. And obviously, yeah, you're doing a lot of that stuff yourself now, which we're gonna go get into later. So you're doing, so you, after NYU, you're working for Chris Birch. This is going on. When does Alala, was there like ideas you had before the brand or like, did it pop up in your mind? How did that come about?
Yeah. You know, I've always been someone, again, my parents were entrepreneurs. So I was like, oh, like I want to do it, but I need the idea, right? Like what's the idea? Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, like just be patient. Like you can't force this stuff. So all through my career up to that point, I was like just paying attention to what's going on. So while I was working for Chris, I was also about to turn 30. And on my bucket list, my pre-30 bucket list was I'm going to do a triathlon. And so I started training for triathlon, but in that process, like there's a lot of training, right? You're swimming, you're biking, you're running. And I'm like, I'm gonna go find some new gear to like motivate me to go work out and like make this whole process like just a little more pleasant than it is right now. But you know, this was 10 years ago. And so when I went out to look at the brands and see what's in the market, like there really wasn't anything besides like the big brands, right? That we all know. And I was like, none of these brands like really speak to me. Like I'm not excited about the product. It's fine. It's functional, but like nothing's exciting to me. And so that's when I started thinking like, oh, is there a white space here? Is there a white space for like, you know, a more fashion forward, a more kind of like blended, you know, kind of activewear brand? And at this time in the world, like athleisure wasn't even a word. It wasn't a trend. It wasn't anything. And so, you know, I was like, wow, like I really think there's a white space here.
Yeah. I mean, what a perfect like storm of ideas, because like you were literally at like the right place and at the right time. That's exactly when it blew up about a decade ago. Okay. Yeah. So your multi-million dollar business, which by the way, I'm wearing one of your tops right now. You're
I know, so cute.
Your people sent it over to me. It is so well made and so comfortable. So I'm obsessed. I've worn your brand though before your people sent stuff. So good. But when, I guess like, when did you start getting the investment? And you said it was self-funded. So how did exactly did that come about?
Yeah. So we started, I was fortunate enough to have a little bit of a friends and family round in the beginning. So it was just like mostly family, you know, kind of getting me started. And I think anybody who's thinking about starting a product business, like the reality of starting a product business is that you need the product, right? You need to buy the product. And so it is a little more capital intensive than like if you were starting a service-based business, you know, where you're trading your hours for money. So I had a little bit of money kind of like saved up, and then like family money a little bit to kind of start the investment and the production process of our first collection. But kind of since then, it's been self-funded, which means the business is kind of, you know, we reinvest everything back into the business basically. And then as the business grows, we've also been able to, you know, forge relationships with lenders, financial lenders, to kind of help us with our growing inventory needs and just our growing needs in general.
Yeah. I love to get into like the nitty gritty details, because I think a lot of people like, oh yeah, like I started a business and we were funded, and then it all kind of came to be. So like, if we go backwards for a second, you come up with this idea, you come up with the name, exactly like, are you the one sketching the designs? Are you meeting with someone like to help you with that? Like, how does that process work?
Yeah. So I think for me, it was a very interesting exercise of saying like, okay, what do I know and what don't I know? And I did not know how to design, you know, anything. I had the vision in my head of what I wanted everything to look like, but I'm not the person that's like drawing all the CADs and, you know, measurements and things like that. So one of the first things I did was really to work with a freelance designer, freelance activewear designer, to help me come up with this first collection that we ran. And she had a lot of experience. And so we were able to like get through, you know, a lot of the initial stages of sketching, making samples, finding a factory to work with us, like all that stuff kind of happened at the beginning. And it was a joint effort between me and her.
Were you only online at this time when the collection was ready to go? Like, how were you marketing it?
Yeah. So we ended up actually, because I knew online was going to be, you know, a part of it, but I also wanted the wholesale. So we ended up working with a showroom here in New York to show our first collection. So we got it ready like 8 months before it was actually supposed to go live. And we invited, you know, everybody to come and see it. So Equinox actually was our first wholesale partner ever.
No way. Yeah. Legendary. Yeah. Okay.
So they carried our first line. And again, like, this was when we launched in 2014, that was like the exact time that like people started talking about athleisure. You know, it was like we rode that wave and we entered the market like right when everything was happening. And so there was lots of interest from, you know, customers, but also retailers. So we started with Equinox. Second season, we were stocked in Bloomingdale's, and we've worked with every single person under the sun at this point. You know, through the 9 years that we've been around.
Yeah. By the way, where did the name come from, Alala? What's the background behind that?
Yeah. So Alala is the name of a Greek goddess, and her name stands for a battle cry. And I just love that name because I think it says so much about us as women. We are, you know, kind of forging our own paths every day, and just the strength and resilience that we all have. Like, I feel like Alala really captures that. And it really is the essence of our brand.
Yeah. And it's such a good name too, from a marketing standpoint. It's very memorable, which is really good on your part.
Yeah.
but no, with that said though, like, I guess now you're, I mean, so many years later, look at where you've gone now. I mean, you've accomplished so much in like since 2014, which is honestly not that long ago. So it's pretty wild. But how does a brand like yours, like, because the space is so competitive now, like, how does it stay fresh and relevant?
Yeah. I think it all comes back to knowing your customer and knowing what they want. So, you know, we spend a lot of time listening to what our customer feedback is and just like understanding, I think, as much as we can, like what her life looks like right now, you know what I mean? And trying to be relevant to that life that she's living right now. So, you know, I think in fashion, there's always an element of trend, which is always important, right? Like we end up kind of always wearing the same thing or liking the same colors because that's where the trend is, which, you know, we also kind of tap into. But at the core, I think it's like knowing who your customer is and knowing what she's looking for from you and giving her the products that, you know, maybe she didn't even know she needed from you. And so it's definitely not a full science, neither is it an art. I think it's a mix of the two.
Yeah. Have you find yourself like growing with your customer in the last like decade and like you kind of create new products that's like now she's maybe not 25 anymore. Now she's a mother. Yeah. What has that been like for you?
Yeah. 100% that has happened. Yeah. And I feel like that's one of the reasons, you know, we wanted to do a rebrand this year after 9 years was because we've changed so much, you know, from when we started, and I've changed so much from when I started and grown up. And so like for me right now, like I'm really craving like very sophisticated silhouettes, but like comfortable, right? And I don't want like necessarily to buy like the trendiest things and then throw them out like 6 weeks later, like or 6 months later. I want the pieces that I can like mix and match with my jeans and my skirts and can see myself wearing for years. And yeah. So we've also shifted Alala into that direction of like offering a lot more like sophisticated, timeless classic pieces that, you know, have the elements of athleisure, like everything's super comfortable, everything you can throw in the wash, like, you know, the fabrics are beautiful, but they're not precious. They're just easy, everyday clothes, but they look really good. And so, you know, I've also grown so much and learned so much. And think about yourself when you were, you know, 10 and 15 and 20 and 30,
right.
Like your style changes, your interests change. And I think you can see that through like the growth of Alala as well. And, you know, yeah, 9 years seems like a long time, but also doesn't seem like a long time at all.
Yeah.
And I feel like you need to, like you need to give the brand time to get to know itself as well. And so I finally feel, same with myself, like I finally feel that Alala is very centered and like grounded and comfortable in the space that we are now. And it makes sense. Just like me as an entrepreneur, like I feel so much more grounded and like secure in my decisions and what my vision is for the company.
Yeah. I mean, it's really like, it almost sounds like this brand, and when I feel this is true for a lot of entrepreneurs, it's almost a reflection of the relationship you have with yourself, how like you've grown over time. And now your brand is in this place. And so it's really cool to see how it's like evolved over time. But speaking to your pieces, though, like pieces like the one I'm wearing right now, you also sent me like a really cute black tank top. Like I know these are pieces that are going to last. Like they're not like trendy pieces where I'm going to be bored of it, because I have clothes like athleisure clothes. I'm never going to wear them again. Like I'm sick of it. It's trendy. So it's, I think as we start to become like women and a little bit more mature, you're looking for like those classic staple pieces. And also there's something sexy too about like being a little bit more covered up and just like, more. Like I've been talking about this with my friends. It's just like, you're more like less is more. And I'm more about that as I get older.
Yeah, for sure. And I think for us, it's always been very, very important to offer not just like, you know, all the sexy little bras. And
right.
It's like, we do have some of that. But like, it's really offering, you know, great tank tops, great t-shirts, great track pants, things that, you know, yeah, you're a little more covered up, but you still look really, really chic and really sophisticated.
Oh yeah, I could see a top like this if I was like bigger busted, like I would feel totally comfortable in this. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, very cool. What's been like some of like the challenges that like you've experienced as an entrepreneur, like over like the last decade, like maybe ones that like stick out to you and like how you overcame it?
And now a word from our sponsor. Try it free for 30 days is enough time to try and completely forget about a subscription or service. Before you know it, you're paying for a subscription you don't use every single month. With Rocket Money, you can change that with just a few quick taps. Rocket Money, formerly known as Truebill, is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps you lower your bills all in one place. Did you know that over 80% of people have subscriptions they forgot about? Like that streaming service you bought to watch just that one show, or that free trial that you never even used. Recently, I opened up the Rocket Money app and I went to my recurring charges and I saw that I had Paramount Plus as a charge and I don't even use it because I just used it for one show that I was watching. So all I had to do was click the subscription, cancel, and it was all done for me. So with that said, stop throwing your money away, cancel unwanted subscriptions, and manage your expenses the easy way by going to rocketmoney.com/smalltalk. That's rocketmoney.com/smalltalk. rocketmoney.com/smalltalk. Now, let's get back into the episode.
Yeah, I mean, personal journey as an entrepreneur has been like so, you know, so much growth and so much turmoil.
Yeah.
Sometimes, and I'm sure you can relate to this as well. Like, you know, I think there was a lot of imposter syndrome, like when I started doing this. And at the time when Alala launched, it was like, you know, all these female entrepreneurs that were in like all the magazines and stuff, they all looked the same almost. They all were, you know, skinny and blonde and skinny, or like came from like really great schools and great families. And I never felt that I was like, I look like them. I never felt like I was like, oh, like I belong in that group of, you know, girls. And so there was a lot of like kind of inner searching and inner kind of work that I needed to do on my end to get over some of that imposter syndrome, to get over like, you know, for me, like I'm not a size zero, like, and I have a fitness brand, you know, like I'm like, okay, like how does that all match up like in my own mind? And then I was also worried about what other people like, oh, if they saw me, like would they be like, oh, she doesn't look like the founder of like an activewear brand, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think there was a lot of work that needed to be done personally for me to just get comfortable with who I am and how, you know, what I have to give to the world through Alala. And that certainly has not been an easy journey, nor has it been a short journey, but it's been the most important one, I think.
I mean, to be fair, you started in 2014 and like body image and body positivity was not quite there yet. And it still has like a long way to go. So like that makes sense that like you were like comparing in that way. But like luckily, like we've come into a place now where like that's what most brands are trying to achieve and strive towards, is like they're showing models of all different shapes and sizes. And I'm sure you felt that like being like, you know, a brand owner yourself. But like, I get it. And then it's like you kind of have to ask yourself, like, what has that been like with body image? And like, you have an activewear brand. Like, is it, I feel like in some ways it would almost like maybe you can put yourself in the shoes of the consumer when maybe not a lot of owners can do that. Yeah. How has that been like for you?
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. And I like, once I shifted my thinking into like, you know, I can understand my consumer better this way. You know, we're all team of women at Alala as well. So I feel like what we talk about are very real issues and concerns of our customers, right? Like not liking certain body parts. Still, you know, we are all beautiful, but I know we all have the things that like bother us about ourselves. And so like not liking certain body parts, being wanting to feel really good in our clothes and not feel like you're pulling or it's pinching. So a lot of our discourse when we're designing and fitting and producing the clothes is really around like, how is our customer going to feel in these pieces? And I think that's like such an important part of who we are as a brand versus like somebody else who has like a huge design department and they're just like, you know, churning things out all day long and they don't really care about how the quality or the fit are.
Yeah, no. And I think that's so important that like you're having those conversations within your team, because I think a lot of the times these really big brands with these like massive, insane budgets, like they're just trying to create trendy clothes for the moment, but they're not really taking into consideration like all of the minute details that are required when making brands. I think it's really cool. But again, too, again, no shade, but like there are, as you and I both know, there are a lot of like owners that are like the typical super skinny, work out in the Hamptons. And like, and that's just not relatable to a lot of people. Yeah. I mean, looking at you as an owner, like, it's like, this is somebody that like you get it. Cause like you're living it yourself.
Yeah. And I think that's so important. I feel like also in the wellness space, right? Like you think about wellness, you think about Gwyneth Paltrow, like there's so many more of us that are on our wellness journeys who don't look like that, but we are fully deserving of like, you know, experiencing all of it. And I think having a voice in the wellness space as well.
Yeah. And also being a woman of color, like what has that like been like for you in the last like decade? Have you noticed there be a change in conversation, like areas that still need improvement, the feedback you got from like your own customers? What has that been like?
Yeah, I think like at first, you know, kind of coupled with what I was saying before about imposter syndrome, like I was more afraid to show up as like the founder of the brand. You know, I was like, I'm just going to let Alala speak for itself. And a lot of that was also like cultural, because I grew up in an Asian household. Like a lot of Asian people, like they don't like to like talk about themselves or be self-promoting, right? They're like, oh, we have to be humble, humble, humble. And I felt like that was, you know, something I took to heart, but it really was a disadvantage to me, especially when we were starting Alala, because I wasn't so comfortable with kind of putting myself out there. And I feel like if I had, you know, I could have made a bigger splash even, you know, with the brand and being a little bit different than the norm. And so, it's been definitely a journey of, you know, understanding like what I bring to the table is special and unique versus like it being just like different.
Yeah, 100%. And also too, I think this rebrand, like I said earlier, it's like a reflection of like where you've arrived in life. It's like, no, like I have a voice and I'm going to share it. And it's not about being like braggy or egotistical. It's like, this is where I've arrived. And so many women can relate to your story. Cause I think there's, especially like being a woman, like there's just like this like insecurity, like I'm not enough, or like, I don't know, like maybe I should be a little bit more quiet. And it's just like such a bad way of thinking, because that like goes into other parts of your life and in different areas of your life, like relationships and things like that. So it's doing so much more than just like talking about activewear, like you're showing up for yourself. Yeah.
Yeah. And I feel like growing up, like I didn't have a lot of people to look up to who look like me. Right. Mm-hmm. I still honestly like don't, although there are more now. So, you know, I feel like it's so helpful to see somebody who looks like you or who you can relate to do what you want to do. And I've always tried to find mentors and people that I can like look up to as well in this journey.
Yes. Denise, I want to see more of you all over my socials and doing the absolute most. No, you're killing it. And I know, like you said before, a female and all female team, so awesome and all about female empowerment. But I know that you also work on something called Take the Lead, which is a little bit similar. So if you want to talk about that for a second.
Yeah. So Take the Lead is a nonprofit and I sit on the board and it's run by this incredible woman, Gloria Felt, who has been kind of in the space of like women's movement and like fighting for women's rights for 50 years at this point. She's incredible. And Take the Lead, you know, we are trying to get women to a place of gender equality in the workplace by 2025, which means equal pay for equal work. It means having more women in high level positions in the C-suite at companies, more women sitting on boards of big companies. And so how we do that is by doing these coaching programs, group coaching programs of, you know, teaching women how to like kind of find the power within them and harness that into actionable steps to like, you know, get a promotion, actionable steps to get a raise, actionable steps to like find yourself, you know, a seat on a board.
Yeah. Amazing. So good. And then also within that world as well, and this kind of goes back to your journey with Chris in the beginning, but like you are also an angel investor now yourself. What has that journey been like for you?
Yeah. You know, I'm just starting out on that journey right now. I am very excited to kind of like get in and, you know, support some other entrepreneurs. And I feel like my 9 years has been amazing, but I haven't had outside investors. And so I haven't had the type, I think, of support that like, you know, somebody who has like a big VC round and big VCs backing them, like has additional thought leaders like in their team. And so, you know, for entrepreneurs who might, like me, like who might not want to go like a traditional VC route and want to raise money in other ways or just need some support, like I think being an angel investor and advisor to other female entrepreneurs is like something I'm truly very, very passionate about.
Yeah.
You know, kind of helping them sidestep the mistakes I've made in my, you know, in my journey, helping them grow even faster and better and, you know, achieve more than I have in the 9 years that I've been around.
Yeah. What's some of the feedback you've gotten from like some of these women you've spoken with about like starting businesses and like, you know, when it comes to investing, like what have you heard from them?
I think everybody has a lot of fears and questions around money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's something that is so obviously crucial to any business is having money coming in. Obviously money's going out. You know, I think there's still a lot of like uncertainty and like questions around, you know, how much money do I need? Where do I get the money? Like, how do I structure, you know, asking people for money. And I think like as an entrepreneur, anybody who's thinking about being an entrepreneur, like you do need to educate yourself, I think, on like a foundational level of like how money works in a business, you know? And I feel like a lot of people like, you know, I have great marketing ideas, I have great, you know, product ideas and everything. But when the rubber hits the road, you're going to have to pay for all that.
So, right, right.
You know, like that's, I think, where people get like really frustrated and disappointed because, you know, maybe they don't have the funds to really push or they've been, they spent money on the wrong things. And so I feel like kind of dispelling some myths around money in entrepreneurship, especially for women. I feel like I find like the guys I talk to have a, almost like a different understanding of money. And then women are a little bit more like, at least the women I've spoken to, a little bit more like cautious and shy about, you know, discussing the money piece. But I think it's a really important discussion to have.
Yeah. Is it a misconception that like you need a certain level to start a brand? Because I've also heard of brands starting with like $10,000. Like, so I guess like what advice would you give to people that maybe they're like, I don't have $100,000 to start a brand?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think you need a little bit, right? Like $10,000. Yes. I think you can be resourceful enough to find that from friends and family, your savings, whatever it is. Like,
yeah.
And yes, you can start. I would say if you want to start that way, the one thing that I would say is you have to be like, so cautious of, you know, how you're spending your money and how you're spending your time. Right? Because like those are probably the only two things that like, you know, that you're holding on to in the beginning. And so, you know, don't spend your money on like big splashy things. Like a lot of time I feel like those things look so attractive, like having a big dinner with influencers and having, you know, this big event or something like that.
Right.
You know, I would say like really to start very carefully and kind of test new things out, marketing channels, you know, product ideas, but do it in a way that like, if you fail that one time, it's not going to like burn all the money that you saved. You know what I mean? You can do it kind of like step by step. And I find like entrepreneurs are very resourceful people. So use your resources that you have for free, right? Like, go to networking events, go find other brands who want to partner with you for free. And like, you guys can promote each other, do a giveaway together, you know, go spend your weekend, like at a store, which might be wanting to host you at their store and you can be selling product there that weekend. So I think like being very resourceful, especially when you don't have a lot of money to spend is great. Obviously social media is a free tool that so many people have used so well to their advantage, to grow their brands. And so I think it's entirely possible. You're not going to go from zero to 100 million in 2 years, but you know, you will be able to grow and grow profitably.
Yeah, I think it's actually probably a blessing that like you don't start off with a ton of money right away, because like that's where like major mistakes happen. I think starting off with like less, you can kind of like learn more lessons along the way. So when you do have, you know, more cash flow coming in, you know how to utilize it correctly. So it's actually a blessing in a lot of ways if you don't, which is really good.
I think so too. Yeah, I think so too. And it was one of the reasons we didn't want to take a ton of money at the beginning. You know, like I wanted to learn everything. I wanted to, you know, be able to make the mistakes along the way. But now like I know my business so well because I've touched every single part of it, you know, over the 9 years.
Yeah.
In a way that I think if you had tons of money and a big team, like right at the beginning, you don't get as intimate with your business.
Yeah. And last question about money, and then we'll move on. How did you separate like your personal finances from the businesses? Like, because you are self-funded. So how did that work?
Yeah. I mean, if you decide to start a business, split it up immediately, like have a business bank account that you either you put some of your own money into, you have your own business debit card, credit card, separate it like immediately. I would not mix my personal finances with my business at all. So if you guys are thinking about starting a business, like I would go find a very low fee or no fee business bank account for you to set up, because it's just going to make your life so much cleaner and easier. And, you know, you're not going to have like things all jumbled up in there.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Let's go more into Denise. So how do you manage like personal life and business life? And I know for a lot of entrepreneurs, like the lines kind of blend a little bit and it gets a little bit gray. So how are you like taking time for yourself and managing that?
Yeah. Well, I have a pretty strict schedule. So I have days in the week, Tuesdays and Fridays, that I don't take any meetings. So I don't have any meetings either with my team or outside meetings. Those are like my focus days. So in terms of work, that really helps me because I know, okay, Tuesday, I have this project that's going to take me 2 hours to complete, and I'll put it on a Tuesday, and I know I'll have that time to do it, you know? So I feel like having focus days during my week helps me with managing work. But, you know, truth be told, like I enjoy working and I enjoy what I do. For me, I have two dogs. And so, you know, I'll work the morning until like my afternoon walk. And like from 4 to like 7 p.m., I'll walk my dogs, I'll eat an early dinner, I'll exercise, do all that. And then I personally enjoy like a couple hours of work like after dinner. So like now probably from like 7 to like 9-ish, I'll like
Denise,
be on my computer.
Okay.
but also yes. Like Friday night to Saturday, I try not to do any work.
Yeah.
But it is an all-consuming thing. And I feel like, you know, as much as you need to put boundaries around your business and the time you spend working, like it's really up to you. And I do think like, you know, also understanding like when you work the best, right? I work really well at night. So I actually don't want to waste my nights, you know, kind of watching TV and stuff because my mind is like going at night. And so that took some time to figure out too. Like this schedule that I'm on now took some time to figure out. But yeah, do what works for you. If you're a morning person, get up early, do all your, you know, important stuff in the morning, and then spend the rest of your day like in your meetings and things.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm joking because I'm also a night person. I completely relate. But I do say, I always tell people though, like you can't operate on an empty cup, but like you love what you do. And I just, but regardless, I think it's important to like take that time for yourself, even if you don't think you need it. Like we all need it. We're all human. So
yeah. No, definitely take the time you need to fill up your cup for sure. And I've definitely been very burnt out and very unhappy during this journey. And I'm not about to go back there again.
Yeah, no, that's really good. And then I always say I like to mix a little personal with business. So how has the dating world been like for you?
Oh, dating has been really fun. So
okay,
I have a whole like dating. So actually, when I started Alala, I was married. And
interesting. Okay.
Very interesting. And I don't know if any of you can relate or your listeners can relate, but I felt like nothing about my ex-husband, but as I started Alala while we were married, I felt like I just like grew so much in such a short time. And, you know, I felt like at some point, or we felt at some point, that we were not like as compatible anymore as we had thought. And so, you know, I got divorced like maybe six years ago at this point. And, you know, have been dating, and I've dated some amazing people. And I feel like I do really well with people who have the same kind of positive outlook on life that I do at this point. Like, same with friends, same with, you know, people I date. Like, I don't enjoy being around people who constantly complain about their jobs, you know, complain about their coworkers, but do nothing about it. And I think a lot of, you know, my corporate friends were leaning more that way. And I was trying to like forge forward over here. And so I had to make some difficult decisions, I think, along this journey to cut out the people, whether they were like people I was dating or whether they were people, you know, I was friends with.
Yeah,
that I wanted to surround myself with people who were all kind of like looking forward, who were really excited about, you know, opportunities that they were going to pursue, who were really, you know, building their confidence in themselves as like grounded, holistic people. You know what I mean?
They were on the same wave as you.
Yeah, they were on the same wave. Exactly. And so with dating, yeah, that's been the case. And, you know, now I've been dating this amazing guy for 2 years. He's wanting to start his own business and he's very supportive of me and like my working hours and all the stuff I have to do. And so I do think you have to find people who really complement you, I think, in your vision for yourself and your future.
Yeah. And that's why I tell people, like, don't rush, like, and this is like no shade towards you, but I tell people, like, don't rush into marriage right away.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, it takes time to figure out yourself. Like, I'm not the same person I was 5 years ago. Like, getting to that place of like, you really know what you want. It's like, especially as like you get into your 30s, like, it's just like, this is exactly what I want. And like, I'm not settling for less. And like, that is something that does come with age. So yeah, but
100%, I agree.
Happy. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Okay. Do you have any like fun vacations planned for this year or like things that you just are looking to accomplish or whatever?
Yeah. You know what? I'm really excited for Olala this year. I feel like, you know, this is with the rebrand just happening, like it really has started a new chapter for us. So I'm very excited to share more of our story with, you know, your audience and other people out there and really kind of spread Olala to, you know, the four corners of the world. And we have some really amazing collaborations coming up with some incredible women. So stay tuned for that. And in terms of my personal life, like I'm actually going to a mastermind at the end of the month.
Amazing.
For a guy who hosts a podcast that I've been listening to for years. And so, you know, I'm like, yeah, he's doing this little mini mastermind. Like I'm going. But that's a big part of like my journey too, is like investing in myself.
Mm.
Like I don't buy a lot of like fancy clothes or bags anymore. Like I used to, like I spend a lot of my money kind of in this like self-improvement, self-development world. And so I'm excited for this mastermind because they're going to go in and like break down everybody's business and like help you make it better. And so like that to me is so much more worth the investment than like spending it on another bag.
I'm so excited for you, Denise. Like I'm excited to see like this new era of your life. Like you're really just like putting your voice out there and like people like love this. Like don't ever like doubt that part of yourself, which I know you already know now, but like they love to hear people's backstories and even people listening to the podcast, like everyone just kind of seeing where they were, how they got to where they are now. Cause sometimes it seems like it's so impossible for somebody listening. Like, how did they get there? Like, that can never be me. But like, no, it can. Like, they were you. Like, now.
Yeah. They totally can be me, and they can be so much better than me. You know what I mean? Like, and for me, I felt like with Olala, like at first, I just didn't know as much as I knew now. So I was like following a lot of like other people's advice. You know, like, oh, somebody said we should do this, or somebody said we should be more like this, or you know, like, oh, people are really liking this, so we should do more of that, and like. Now, as somebody who just turned 42, like I just feel so much more like, no, like this is where I am. This is where I want Olala to be. And it, again, it takes time, I think, to get there.
I heard 40s, by the way, are like the best decade. So like everyone I know in their 40s, like they say it's like the best decade. So I am excited for you. That's so good.
Oh my gosh. Me too. So, I'm excited.
Yeah. And also right now you said earlier, you have one store right now in New York. Where is it located again?
It's on Bleecker Street in the West Village. So come by if you're in New York. Yeah.
Oh, look, location is epic. So good. Come down to Miami. You need to like set up shop in Miami. Like I'm telling you, like this is your area. Like everyone's into fitness over here. It's so, so good.
Love
amazing.
It.
Amazing. And then honestly, just to wrap up, like I love, again, I think the fact that you named Olala, like you, this is the goddess, like she was like the goddess always within you. And it's kind of see how like she's kind of carried you like through this whole journey. And like, you're really becoming like the goddess that you always like, you know, thought you would be. And it's cool to see that come to fruition over time. So like the brand really speaks for itself.
Yeah. Thank you so much for recognizing that. Definitely on a journey to being my best self, hopefully.
Yeah. And your consumers, I think, see that. And like, again, like that's what the brand is all about. And you've done an excellent job of that. And it's cool to see how it's like, you know, transitioned in like the past decade. But Denise, I'm so excited for you. Thank you so much for coming on. This was a pleasure.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys. Bye.
Okay, guys, if you're hearing this, it means you made it to the end of the episode. So thank you so much for listening. As always, please be sure to subscribe so you're the first to hear about new episodes. Don't forget to rate and review. It really means the world, and I love getting feedback from you guys. Don't forget to check out the description. You can find all of the promo codes mentioned throughout this episode, like Rocket Money and Alala and all that good stuff. And finally, with that said, I hope you guys have a fabulous rest of your week. We will be chatting very soon, sending you all the love, and bye for now.